family on it. I'd love to introduce myself a little bit to you guys. So my name is Matt, and this was my wife, Kim, and we have five kids. Our oldest is your farthest right, Isabella. She's 22 years old. She just graduated Houghton University. Are you guys from Houghton? Yeah. Nice. That's awesome. Very cool. So we had never heard of Houghton until we started looking, and that became the clear choice for my daughter. She's an equine management major, so she's now leading an equestrian program at Camp Hebron in Halifax, PA. So that's her. She's 22. Our son next to her, Caleb, is our second child. He's a junior at Liberty University, and he's a music major there. And then our daughter Lila is on my right on that picture. So she is graduating high school this week, actually. She's graduating high school this week, and she's going to do community college. And then we have our 13, almost 14 year old Adeline. And then a few years behind, we have Everly. We almost named her Surprise, but we thought that it was better to name her Everly. Yeah. It actually stands for God's everlasting faithfulness to us. He's a good God to us. Kim and I have been married for almost 27 years. It'll be 27 years in September. And we met at a Christian coffee house. We were both singing the same night. And the sound man, I have to thank the sound man because he said, you guys would sound good together. So he made that introduction, and we've been singing together ever since. We actually sang that night. And we sang a worship song together and closed the night together. And she asked me for my number. And so I was pretty hot back then. I am currently the lead worship pastor at LCBC Church in Pennsylvania. So if you travel around Pennsylvania, you might see a couple different LCBC churches. We never set out to be a multi-site church. We basically grew our church in Mannheim to around 8,000 people. So I've been on staff since 1999. So since the 1900s, and they hired me as the interim worship leader while they were looking for the worship pastor. So they were looking for someone with a Bible degree. I had a music degree, but I love Jesus. And in that year, they ended up hiring somebody, but kept me on staff as well. So we doubled that year. We went from 500 to 1,000 that year. And then we continued to grow after that. And then the township just said, you're done growing. You can't grow anymore. You can't build anymore. But we didn't feel like God was done. So that's when we started to launch multi-sites, really just to offload our main campus so we could introduce more people to Jesus. So that's a little bit about our church. It's Lives Changed by Christ is what LCBC stands for. So I've been there for a long time. Honestly, I never really set out to become a pastor. If I'm being honest with you, I became a pastor in my years there. So I've gone through the ordination process and now I'm one of the pastors, and I serve on our strategic leadership team, kind of overseeing the whole church. I never imagined that if you would have told me back in 1999 that that's what I'd be doing, I would have maybe laughed at you because I just had no idea that that's what God had for me. Honestly, so I grew up in a really musical family. So my grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, there was a band called the Central Pennsylvania Gospel Band. And we would go around and we would play in churches and camp meetings and revivals. So like doing these outdoor kind of things, that's really in my wheelhouse. It's something that I grew up doing as a kid. And I remember my grandmas were the two directors. My grandpas were the two tuba players. So I wanted to be cool and play tuba like my grandpas. So that's what I started doing, started playing the tuba. As a teenager, I started writing and performing my own songs, and I started and played in multiple bands, and we actually recorded a couple albums and even had some radio airplay. Once again, being a pastor, working for a church was not what I was dreaming about in those years. Honestly, I pictured myself playing in packed stadiums in front of thousands of people. That was my goal. My goal was to be a rock star. I thought maybe after I toured the world, when I was too old to tour anymore, maybe then I could work for a church, right? Or maybe be a music teacher or something like that. I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston, And I've had some pretty amazing experiences. Like that's a pretty amazing school. And there a lot of pretty famous people have gone there and things like that. So I went there. Now, don't be too excited. I went there as a jazz tuba major. Okay, so I went there as a jazz tuba major, but I learned a lot. I was able to play in a lot of ensembles and things like that. But I ended up playing and singing with people that went on to play and sing with Justin Timberlake, Janet Jackson, Prince, Christina Aguilera, right? All of these rock stars. I was in classes in a country show at Berkeley with Natalie Maines from the Dixie Chicks, I don't know if you've listened to any country music, but the Dixie Chicks. John Mayer was at Berkeley around the time that I was there as well. Well, after Berkeley, I moved back home, got married, and started my own career as a musician and a recording artist. And we started a band together, Kim and I. And we've shared the stage with a lot of amazing Christian musicians. Like, we've opened and played for people like Michael W. Smith, Paul Balash, Chris Tomlin, and many more. So I actually have a picture up there. So if you look really close, it's a terrible picture, but that's Michael W. Smith, and that's Kim, and there I am playing bass. So there's proof that we played with Michael W. Smith. Probably the top or most notable moment in our music career was when we had the chance to play for President George W. Bush. This was a pretty amazing experience. Anytime you get asked to play for the president, that's a pretty big deal. And he actually liked us. He specifically asked us to come back and play for him twice more during his re-election campaign. And if you were to go, you're probably wondering why I'm telling you all this. Okay. I'm not telling you this stuff just so you can be like, oh, that's great. Okay. If you were to go back and ask Michael W. Smith if he knows Matt Goss, he may or may not remember me. Okay, he's played with a lot of people over the years. We met a few times at various events and things. We were on stage together. So my name might ring a bell to him, but he doesn't know me, right? If you were to ask former President George W. Bush if he knows me, what do you think his answer might be? Probably not, right? I mean, he might. I gave him a CD. He thanked me for that. He actually sent me a card thanking me for this CD, which was pretty cool. But he doesn't know me either. And if I'm honest, the truth is I don't know him. I don't know them either. I met them, right? But I don't know them. So what does it mean to truly know somebody? It's definitely deeper than just meeting them, right? It's more intimate than that. The Bible in Genesis chapter 4 in the King James Version says, Adam knew his wife Eve, and she conceived a son. Okay. This isn't going to be a birds and the bees talk, so I just want to let the air out of the room a little bit. What I do want to draw our attention to is the fact that there is intimacy and closeness and friendship associated with knowing someone, truly knowing somebody. The longer I live, the more relationships I've seen come and go. And as our church has grown and as our ministry has grown, the circle has definitely grown wider. And I don't know if that's been your case, too. Like, just the more you live, the wider that circle gets. It hasn't always grown deeper, though. Does that make sense? I have more acquaintances, but maybe less true friendships. I've gone through many seasons of knowing, and some relationships are for life and others are for seasons of life. I think there are many types of relationships. So if we kind of break that down, we have family, friends, acquaintances, romantic relationships. I would call it maybe like situational relationships like church, work, or sports teams. Now, a family relationship is an interesting one. It's not one that you've chosen to be in, except for marriage. You kind of choose to be in a relationship, in a family relationship with your spouse. But other than marriage, it's something that you're born into, and you're typically bound to it for life. In the case of adoption, a family chooses you, and that's a beautiful thing in and of itself to be chosen. But nonetheless, it wasn't something that you chose, right? Work relationships are an interesting one as well, because you interact with these people for more hours in the week than you do family and friends. I don't know if you've realized that. Like, sometimes I'm like, man, I've spent more time around these people that I work with than I have with my own family. But these relationships are often transactional. I do this work for you and you pay me, right? Or we do this work together and we complete this project and it's mutually beneficial for us. There can be closeness and friendships that are formed here, but knowing who you work work with isn't at the forefront. You're not there to know people. You're there to get work done, right? Friendships are something that you choose. You kind of decide how close you want these relationships to be. Friendships are usually formed around specific things, like maybe you met at work, found out you have the same hobbies, you like the same sports teams, you both like to play golf, right? Or something like that, and you started to get together outside of that. A lot of, in our early years of marriage and having kids as they were younger, a lot of our friendships were formed around our kids' friends. We found ourselves just kind of getting together with neighbors and things like that. The kids would start playing, so the neighbors would come over and we'd hang out. So what's interesting is, like, however it happens, these relationships are chosen. The deepness of these friendships kind of depends on how much you want to, how deep you want to get, right? So we kind of have a choice there. Now, romantic relationships are a step further because there's a different level of closeness that happens in a romantic relationship. I remember when Kim and I were dating back in the 1900s, I couldn't actually believe that this amazing girl wanted to hang out with me. She liked me. This was cool. And like, we met in the summer of 95. Now that sounds like a song, right? In the summer of 95. All right, that's not the song. But anyway, that's our song, the summer of 95. At any moment that summer that we weren't both at work, we were together. We were hanging out. We were getting to know each other. And when I went back to college in the fall, due to the long-distance relationship, now this is before there were cell phones and FaceTime and all that sort of stuff, so we had a long-distance carrier, right? So we would call every single night, and we'd talk for hours on the phone and write letters to each other. We actually ran up a phone bill that we ended up paying into our first year of marriage. That wasn't great. That part wasn't great. But the reason that happened was we wanted to talk. We wanted to be together, right? We didn't spend time together because we had to, right? We wanted to. I couldn't wait to hear her voice at the end of the day. When I get a letter, I would get so excited. I would even smell the letter to see if it smelled like her. Like, I just loved being with her. I couldn't wait to see her again. You see, this is actually the kind of relationship that God wants with us. Not necessarily a romantic relationship, but he wants intimacy with us. He doesn't want to be our acquaintance, right? He doesn't want to be somebody that we just hang out with occasionally. He wants to be intimately involved in every single aspect of our lives. It's not enough for him to know about us or for us to know about him. He wants to truly know us. And he's gone to great lengths to prove that to us. James, the half-brother of Jesus, said this. He said, if you believe that there is one God, good. Even the demons believe that and shudder. So it's not enough that knowing and believing that God exists, right? That's not enough. It's not enough to believe that there is a God. We must believe in him and place our faith and trust in him personally. Now, because God's perfect in every way, he can't stand sin. And sin is anything that separates us from God and keeps us from being in right relationship with him. And that's one of the reasons that he sent Jesus to earth. Arguably the main reason, right? 1 John 4:10 says this, this is love, not that God loved us, but that he loved us and sent his son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Now, this is clearly the main reason that Jesus came, to demonstrate his love for us and to save us. But there's another reason as well. God sent Jesus to be close to us, to walk among his people, his creation, and be with us, to touch us, talk with us, hear us, heal us, skin to skin. What an amazing thought, right? That God would subject himself to being in human form just to be close to us. There's a closeness that he desired with us. Hebrews 4:15 says, for we do not have a high priest who's unable to sympathize with our weakness, but we have one who's been tempted in every way just as we are, yet he did not sin. Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. See, we can approach God's throne of grace with confidence, not because we know about Jesus, right? It's not about the knowledge of Jesus. We can approach his throne of grace with confidence because we know Jesus, because we are actually in an intimate relationship with Jesus. John 10 says it beautifully. It says, very truly, actually, this is Jesus speaking. And he reminds us, he actually often would refer himself to as being a shepherd and us being sheep, right? And this is one of those passages. Very truly, I tell you, Pharisees, anyone who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate but climbs in by some other way is a thief and a robber. The one who enters the gate by the is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listens to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he's brought them all in, he goes ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from a stranger because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Now, we actually have a 110-pound Bernedoodle named Finley, okay? He's a big dog. He's only 2 years old. We have kind of a love-hate relationship. My kids love him, and I hate him. I'm just kidding. I love him, too, sometimes, okay? I love him. Our love is conditional. Finley is always a bit standoffish, though. Like, if you were to come over to our house, he would probably kind of stay away from you. If, especially people that, like, want to come close to him, he's like, no, I don't know if I can trust you. You know, it seems like he goes up to people that don't like dogs. Those are the ones that he becomes friends with. But if you were to come over and you were to call Finley over, he would just sit there and he wouldn't come. He might even growl at you. Why do you think that is? He doesn't know you, right? But if I come out, he doesn't have to see me. I yell, Finley, and guess what happens? He comes barreling in to the house because he knows my voice. He knows and trusts me. The same is true for our kids over the years. Like when we'd be in a crowded place, you know, and you'd start to, any of you have a lot of kids? How many of you have like more than three kids? A couple of you? Okay. You ever been in a crowd so much that you start counting your kids just to make sure you haven't lost anybody? Sometimes you call out, hey kids, you know, you want to make sure you get a head count. And they immediately come to my voice and they recognize my voice. There's a lot of voices going on, but they hear my voice above the others. Why? Because they know their father, right? They've spent time with me. We have so many voices calling for our attention today. At school, work, news, social media. Every one of these voices is fighting for our attention, telling us what we're supposed to be focused on. And honestly, every one of those voices crowds out the voice of Jesus. Now, this isn't something new. Like, we think sometimes that in the day that we live now that it's hard to hear Jesus' voice, but even to know him well. But this is something that even the disciples, those that walked skin to skin and face to face with Jesus, they even struggled with this too. So John 14, 5 through 14, it says this. Thomas said to him, Lord, we don't know where you are going, so how can we know the way? Jesus answered, I'm the way, the truth, the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And then he says this, if you really know me, if you really know me, you will know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him and have seen him. And Philip said, Lord, show us the Father and that will be enough for us. And Jesus answered, don't you know me, Philip? Even after all this time that I've been around you, anyone who's seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, show us the Father? Don't you believe that I am in the Father and the Father's in me? The words I say to you, I do not speak on my own authority. Rather, it is the Father living in me who is doing his work. Believe me when I say that I am in the Father and the Father is in me. Or at least believe in the evidence of the works themselves. Very truly, I tell you, whoever believes in me will do the works I've been doing. And they will do even greater things than these, because I'm going to the Father. And I will do whatever you ask in my name so that the Father may be glorified in the Son. And you may ask me for anything in my name, and I will do it. So, even Thomas, right, one of the disciples in this moment, he's asking Jesus, what should we do? Right? He's like, show us the way. We don't know the way. And then Philip says, show us the Father. That will be enough. So Philip got a little bit closer, right? He wasn't asking what to do. He was saying, just show us the Father, right? And then Jesus responds by saying, don't you know me, Philip? Don't you know me after I've been around you for such a long time? You know, so often, I don't know about you, but I want to do great things in this life, right? I want to do great things. I want even great things for God. Do you want to make an impact on this world? Jesus says in this passage, whoever believes in me, not just believes of me, whoever believes in me, He says, we'll do even greater things than Jesus did here on earth. Okay, wait. Greater than feeding the 5,000, healing a paralytic, raising the dead, walking on water. Like, what does he mean? Like, we could get so distracted by the last part of this message and be focused on the doing. You will do these things. And that's the problem. Jesus doesn't want us just to do great things. You realize that? Do you know that? There's a passage in Matthew that has always been a bit of a warning to me. Jesus said in Matthew 7, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name drive out demons, and in your name perform many miracles? Then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers. Like, I don't know, like, okay, I don't want to be blasphemous, but that's kind of like a holy crap verse to me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, oh no, we better pay attention to this one. It's possible somehow for us to go through our whole life thinking that we're even serving God, doing good things for him, and never actually know him. You see, God doesn't want you to do great things. He wants to do great things through you. Can I say that again? Like, he doesn't want you to do great things. He wants to do great things through you. He wants that to come from knowing him deeply. He wants you to listen to his voice. He wants to be the voice in your ear like Isaiah 30, verse 21, that says, whether you turn to the right or to the left, your ears will hear a voice behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it. He wants to be so close to you that your desires are in alignment with his desires for you. Right? That only comes from spending time with him, reading his word and listening to his voice, cultivating a love relationship with him. If you want to know God, get to know Jesus. Get to know his voice and put all the other voices in their rightful place. This is kind of a seek first thing, right? Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all the other stuff will fall into place. Now, if we keep seeking things like work, approval of others, status, financial gain, promotions, titles, more stuff, the focus will slowly drift away from the giver onto the gifts. And we have to be careful about that. Jesus wants us to focus our eyes and our attention completely on him. Focus on the creator, not on the creation. And then all the other stuff falls into place. So I just want to take some of the pressure off of us today, and I want us to stop striving so much. Trying to just please God with our works and actions. We should do good things for God, but it should come out of our relationship with God, right? It should come because we love him and we want to serve him. I think it's important for us to actually take some time and just listen. He says, be still and know that I am God in Psalm 46:10. So often when I spend time praying, I'm telling God everything that I want him to do or everything that I think he should do. Right? Can you imagine if, like, back when Kim and I were dating and I would call her, that I would have just told her everything that I thought and wanted and then never gave her an opportunity to speak back? What kind of a relationship? Do you think she would have stayed with me in those years? If that's what our phone conversation, that wasn't what it was like, was it? Okay, just making sure. How do you think that would have gone? She wouldn't have married me because that's not a relationship. Right? That's one-sided. That's a one-sided conversation. See, God already knows what's on your heart. And he doesn't mind that you bring that stuff and ask him. He wants us to. Like, I love when my kids bring their requests to me and when they have stuff that they want to ask me. But sometimes I already even know what they want before they ask, right? But what if he has something he wants to share with you? And even this weekend, what if God brought you here this weekend because he wants to meet with you? What if he actually wants to have an encounter with you? What if he wants to speak to you through his creation, through his word, right? Through just a time of prayer where you're not just talking, but you're listening. Some of the most powerful times, even here, I was able to spend the last couple days here and just being out, going for a walk, and just stopping and listening for his voice and saying, God, what do you want me to care about? What do you want me to know right now? So today, I want to give us some space to do that, and I want to encourage you to go deeper in your pursuit of knowing God, to go deeper in knowing his heart, his plans for you, his love for you. And I want you to know his voice so well that in the midst of a noisy room, you can hear the still small voice. So as we close today, I just want to ask Kim to come and sing a song for us today. And in this time, I mean, maybe get yourself in a posture where you can listen, okay? I don't want you to sing. I just want you to listen to these words. And maybe just quiet your heart, quiet your mind, and listen for the voice of God.